fucking do it.
Welcome to another episode of Math Boys.
Give me a clean take on that, because I think me saying fucking do it was like in the beginning of that.
We're keeping this, by the way.
Oh, shit. All right, cool.
No, but we'll do a better one. Hey, guys. Welcome to another episode of Magical Boys. It is one half of your Ranma, DJ Kirkland.
Jesus Christ. This is the other half of your Ranma. I'm being forced to continue this joke. Ruben Medina. That's me. Oh, boy. Great.
I really appreciate you for just playing along with my really bad joke.
I don't know if
really
I'd call that...
Really bad Ranma joke.
I don't know if I'd call that playing along as much as, like, dragging myself along. DJ, if you fell into a cursed, like, water hole, what would be your transformation, your Ranma transformation?
Oh God. What would it be? It would be one of two things. One, a corgi.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what? I would take on the challenge of the falling into a spring of a drowned girl thing. Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Why not?
To become a lady?
Yeah.
I would try to fall into the spring of a straight white man. Just to make some things easier on occasion.
Yeah. Yeah, when doused with cold water, he becomes a privileged white man.
Oh, what is this? Sure, here's a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
Here, this interview is going great. Fantastic. I get pulled over and I just throw cold water on myself.
Yeah, real quick. It's like, oh, sorry about that.
Son, why are you so wet? Oh, you know.
You know, just it just happens.
You know, just straight white boy stuff. Anyway.
Welcome to Magical Boys, where we talk about video games, anime, pop culture, and all that shit in between from a queer perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's very queer.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
We're both pretty queer.
Mm-hmm.
Boys.
This is true.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah. No, I would. Yeah. I think there's. I'm waiting for people to be like, receipts. I want some receipts. Yeah. I'm like, no.
It's like, really? You say you're queer, but how queer are you?
Prove it.
Prove it.
Yeah. Enter into the queer games, the queer Olympics.
The queer Hunger Games.
Yeah, but what does that even look like?
The thirsty games?
Like, the thirsty games. You come up, you start in the cornucopia, and, like, you don't have any niceties, so it's, like, all the things around the cornucopia, instead of being weapons, it's, like a cell phone, like, battery charger.
Yeah.
Or just, like, some hair products.
It's, like, all you have is, like, an iPhone, a portable charger, and a Grindr account. and then just figure it out.
Just make a mad dash for that phone so I can use Grindr while I'm stuck here.
Oh God. My God. So
stupid.
What's going on, Ruben? How are you? What's up? What's new?
I'm doing okay. Yeah. You know, just the usual, just keeping busy playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Launched a new podcast that's a comedy one, but I can talk about that later instead of right now.
Okay.
But I think I hinted at it before. If you want to hear me and two white boys do comedy, two straight white boys do comedy, I'll plug that at the end of the show. Yeah. But that's been a lot of my time lately. Yeah. How about you, DJ?
Well, I was on vacation for like two solid weeks, so
that was
Hawaii? Super fun. Yeah, I was in Hawaii for a week, and then flew back to California. I was in SoCal for like a day, and then got on a cruise to Mexico for a couple days. Which,
what was your favorite part of all that?
Being drunk for 2 weeks.
Okay, so I knew that.
No, I mean, Oh, but in all seriousness, like, Hawaii was so dope. We were in Honolulu, and what was really cool about it was we would just get in the car and drive. And we would drive along, you know, I guess of Hawaii, if that's a thing. Yeah. We just drive along it, and there are all these, like, little areas where you could stop and look at the water or go down and find somewhere to swim and all that stuff. And it was just beautiful and nice and warm. And I hate that thing when people say, oh, look, the water's so blue. But, like, it is. It's really it's really beautiful. And the weather was perfect the entire time. And we swam a lot. And we ate a lot. We drank a lot. And it was just really cool to just be somewhere and not have any obligations for a little bit. But I'm really bad at vacations because the whole time while I was there, I was like, there are so many things that I need to do for, like, my comic and then just stuff for Crunchyroll Expo and just things that I want to do in general. But I was like, nah, all that stuff can wait. You're on vacation. Just enjoy being in this place that you've never been to before and just experience that and all the good stuff. So yeah, just like exploring Hawaii and not the super touristy parts of it, but like the actual rural parts of Hawaii and the beaches and all that stuff. It was super fun.
Cool. That sounds dope.
Yeah.
And I have never been to Hawaii, but one day.
Yeah, you should go. It's fun. And I finally, after months, beat Persona 5.
Oh, yeah.
Finally.
Talk to me about it.
Yeah.
Talk to me about this.
I used a guide because I was like, I just want to get through this, and I'd rather not just, like, keep having to get game over after game over after game over after game over. Mm-hmm. So I just used a guide to kind of get me through the last leg of the game, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoy how they wrapped the game up. Again, we've talked about it multiple times, that how the game has a ton of problems, but it's easily one of my favorite games of 2017. I thought the way that they wrapped things up was actually pretty decent. I was actually legitimately surprised at some of the things that happened in it. I was like, oh, I didn't. Okay, I didn't wonder how they were going to wrap that up, and they did. Because I don't want to get too, like, spoiler into it for people that are still out there that are playing it.
Sure, because there definitely are. Who is your wife at the end?
On.
Of course. Okay,
Yeah, so I definitely picked On, and I really enjoyed that moment at the end of the game with her, because I thought it was actually pretty... It was pretty good, because I felt like, for the most part, that the game is definitely male-gazy, like the whole game is.
For sure.
And I appreciate that moment with On that I had at the end, because it was, like, more centered around her feelings and not you as a protagonist.
Oh, cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I really like how they handled that piece of it. But Alice has to do better with women, period.
Oh, for sure.
They just have to do better. But I really enjoyed the game. I'm sad that it's over, because we had been waiting for Persona 5 for years. Mm-hmm. So, you know. And now we got it and it's over. But I really want to do New Game Plus so that I can max out all the social links for the rest of the cast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it.
So this is like a weird question, but I'm curious though, because it's not an experience that I've ever been able to have. So as a gay man playing a game that has romance options, and in the case of Persona, unfortunately, it's all female romance options. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the, like, how do you feel, or, like, what is the appeal of romancing a female character, like, in a game? Because it's, I think it's ostensibly probably different than for me being bi or a straight guy, right?
Mm-hmm. So for me, and I guess this has just been how I've always felt about female characters in games and just how my relationship with women in general is. Like, I love women. I love and respect women, and I love... Because there have been nothing but women in my life growing up. Like, my mom was the breadwinner of our family, and most of all of my cousins are all female. I was the first boy in my family in 15 years, and all the boys came after me. So I'm the oldest and the gayest. And
it's a good title. The oldest, and sounds like a Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Like you're a wizard. The oldest and gayest wizard in all of Middle Earth. Gay Dolph.
True, I am like the gay wizard of the family. For me, it's, I've always, like, I can appreciate, like, oh, these characters are very attractive. Like, they're very beautiful, attractive female characters. And honestly, it was like, oh, I like her personality the most, and I want to get to know her because I think she's really cool. For me, it's like, oh, I think she's cool. Like, I want to, you know, want to get to know her. And I guess because being, one, queer, and two, being black, I'm so accustomed to not seeing myself represented in things that I'm able to kind of like, oh, well, there are things that about this person that I like and I can somehow relate to. So that was kind of how I navigated those relationships with those characters. Yeah, I just looked at it as, this is a character that I like the most out of all of the women, so I want to have a deeper relationship with her. So
cool.
I kind of just treated them like friendships.
Yeah, so it becomes more of a like aesthetic and emotional connection as opposed to like a sexual one.
Yeah, because it was like I can objectively say like, oh, Anna's hot, or I can see how people could think that all of these girls are hot for different reasons. I get that, but. Yeah. For me, it's like, I think that character design is cool, so, like, and I like her personality is cool, so I'm going to pursue that route.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people, or at least from my perspective, that a lot of people kind of misconstrue about being queer in whatever way you are, is that, like, you can still, just because you're queer doesn't mean you can't find someone of the opposite sex attractive in some way. Like, because I think... I'm incredibly attracted to aesthetics, right? So I can look at someone and be like, well, for me, it's like everyone I can be sexually attracted to. But like, even if that wasn't the case, though, I think, you know, you can obviously still look at someone and be like, wow, that person is striking or beautiful or whatever. It's just not like you just don't have a desire to engage them sexually in any way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how I treat romance options in games, to where I have to have a heterosexual relationship. I just kind of look at it like that.
Yeah. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, so now that that's over, 120 hours later, Jesus. I am finally digging into Nier.
Yes, yes, yes. So far, my game of the year, I think.
Yeah. It's really good. I think the game is picking up now.
Where are you?
I got to the robot village.
Oh, you're so like I'm not so, even.
Yeah.
So you get to the robot village when they're all waving the white flags. Okay. Yeah. So you're like you have so much game to go.
Yeah. Yes. I'm barely into it, and it's starting to pick up a little bit. And I'm like, when's it gonna ramp up? And then I met those two boys.
Yeah.
And you fight, and you have that where they, that dialogue fighting scene with the two boys.
Yep, Adam and Eve. Those two fucky boys.
Yeah, incredibly fucky. I'm like these designs are real good.
These like Sephiroth looking, they're very JRPG fucky boys.
Which fine. Sign
one
me
of them,
up.
The one who's just wearing like the black leather pants, the texture on his pants is so dope. It's like a cool like. If you haven't noticed, like, go back and look at them. They're very cool.
Yeah. That game is insane. Yeah. It's so pretty.
It's beautiful. The music is amazing.
Yeah.
Specifically, the song that plays where you are right now, when you first go to the robot village and they're all waving the flags.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely. That song is dope. It's so good.
Yeah, I'm like, this whole experience is just beautiful and awesome. It's everything that I like about action games. It's Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
And I feel like it's approachable. Like, the action isn't too difficult.
Yeah.
But it's fun, and the ability to customize your loadout is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, like, I feel like that game doesn't really hit its stride until, like, halfway through the B route.
Mm-hmm.
And the A route will probably take you 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
The B route will take you probably half of that, maybe mm-hmm. three-fourths.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you hit the C, D, E routes, that's when, like, the game pops off, I would say, part through B, but it pops off in, like, a major way for the C, D, E route stuff. Okay. It gets ridiculous.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to you playing it so we can talk about it more.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, good. So is that all you've been up to lately, playing-wise?
Yeah, and then I played a little bit of Overwatch. I played with Doomfist, and he's very fun. It's cool, because it's like, how do you make a fighting game character work in first person?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Doomfist feels like. So it's like, I'm finding myself kind of like treating him like I treat like fighting game training modes. I'm like, oh, okay, so if I do this into this move, it's like a combo string and then follow up with that. Like, it's really cool. So, like, the fact that they were able to make that character feel powerful, and when you punch, it feels like impact when you punch somebody with mm-hmm. the Doomfist. It's really cool. I do appreciate that he's kind of like a glass cannon, where he's very strong, but he only has 250 health. So
yeah,
you can just lay into him real quick with anybody and just kill him. So
he's also a big target body-wise,
yeah,
too.
He's huge.
I haven't played with him yet. I haven't played Overwatch since he got added. I just haven't had, like, I've been playing so much Horizon Zero Dawn instead. But I need to go back and try him out, because it does, like, I was watching people play him, and I was like, oh, this is very combo intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really want to string his stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely. And Horizon Zero Dawn is another one that is just waiting for me on my shelf. So I think I might play Nier and that back and forth together, so I'm probably going to pop that in.
That's sort of what I did with Persona and Nier for a minute, mm-hmm. and then I kind of mainlined Persona and then went back to Nier.
Yeah.
Horizon, like, the first couple hours, I was like, this is pretty cool. I'm not, like, being blown away. I'm not hooked yet, but I was, like, into it.
Yeah.
And then probably 5 hours in, it kind of, I realized the, I got the rhythm of the game.
Yeah.
And, like, the feel of it. And now I'm, like, 30-something hours in, and that game is surprisingly similar to Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's, once you get into it, it feels very much like Breath of the Wild in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Very Breath of the Wild. I wish side quests were a little bit more interesting as far as character development stuff. Mm-hmm. That's a thing that, like, Breath of the Wild and Nier excel at.
Yeah.
And the coolest part to me, I guess, about Horizon Zero Dawn is the actual story. They really, like, slowly feed it to you. It's sort of a mystery that you're slowly unraveling about, like, what happened to mm-hmm. the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best, like, sci-fi post-apocalypse stories I've read in a long time.
It is
every time you get, like, a data, like whether it's written or it's a voice recording, read it, listen to it. I hadn't initially, and I started going back. They're super interesting and really cool. The story that it's telling through all that stuff is really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for you to get to that, too.
Yay! Yes, I'm excited. And I'm happy that there's kind of been a little bit of a lull in terms of, like, games that I want to play coming out right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to get through all this shit now that I'm done with Persona, which was such a huge time sink, but no, this is not a complaint. It was just a huge time commitment, so I'm glad that I'm done with that now. And I'm watching my boyfriend play Final Fantasy XII, Zodiac Age. Mm-hmm. And he's a nut job. He found, like, a grind area to where he could just, like, and he set all of his gambits up so expertly to where the game just plays itself. So for the past 3 days, he's when we would go to bed, he would just leave the game on, and he would be in this dungeon, and would just, like, continuously fight monsters in that dungeon because he set the gambits up in a way to where he wouldn't die and they would just kill things over and over again. So now all of his characters are level 99.
That does not surprise me, because that is definitely a thing that, like, if you know what you're doing in 12, you can absolutely do, is just set up your gambits and be like, cool, do your thing, game.
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye.
Yeah, so that's what he's done. So everybody's level 99. So that's been fun watching him just do that.
Because mm-hmm.
he's a nut job when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah, what I'm hoping is, like, because there's so many big, big games, I'm hoping to finish Horizon Zero Dawn mm-hmm. soon enough that I can maybe go back and finish Final Fantasy 15 finally, mm-hmm. slash, like, play most of it, more or less.
Yeah.
And then I forgot, like, the second Tomb Raider game I've had for forever, and I didn't really play it through, so I need to play that.
Yeah, me too. I need to finish that. I was playing it initially on the Xbox One, and then I bought it on PS4 because it has all the DLC. If mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken, I think it does.
It does, yeah.
That game is very good.
The first one was... I mean, the first of the new ones was amazing. Yeah, I loved it.
Oh, and it's... And everything about... in the second one, that was... Everything in the first game that was like, oh, this is okay. They, like, vastly improved in the second one. It's very good.
Wow.
It's a very good game.
I'm excited about getting to that. And Titanfall 2 just became part of the EA Access Vault, and I have that on Xbox One. I have that EA Access membership.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, well, it's free. I might as well play through the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get to that at some point, too.
I have that as well. Why don't we try to time that so we can both play the campaign
yes.
around the same time, even though I'm playing it on PS4 because I got it as a gift.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, so it's the same, obviously,
yeah.
so...
Yeah.
We should do that,
mm-hmm.
And then we can talk about it. So yeah, maybe like we'll take like a day sometime this week to like play through a little bit of it up to a certain point.
Yeah,
and then we can talk about it together.
Okay,
that'd be cool.
Yeah,
So I was playing that. I played a little bit of Mamadora: Reverie Under the Moonlight, which is a Steam. It's a PC game that is sort of Metroidvania style.
Okay,
really like really pixel art. Aesthetic.
I'm interested.
And it's very good. A couple of friends recommended it to me. I think they've played it, I think, a few times at Games Done Quick events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, very good and surprisingly hard so far. But I'm enjoying that. And then I bought Overcooked on my Switch because mm-hmm. it's such a fun multiplayer game.
It's such a good game.
It's really, really fun. It's not fun by yourself.
No,
I tried playing by myself, and it's like... It's frustrating. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Having to control, too, because, like, it's not just you. You have to swap your characters constantly.
Yeah.
And that's just, like, not fun.
Yeah.
So I bought it so, like, I had something to play with my girlfriend and my roommates. And also, like, traveling, it's nice to have a little multiplayer game mm-hmm. that you only need one Switch for.
Yeah.
The only problem is that game runs, like, horse shit on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't... Like, Digital Foundry released, like, a... 11-minute video about it,
mm-hmm.
and it's that game runs at like 60 FPS, I think, on most consoles.
Yeah,
that game on Switch doesn't maintain 30. I would say it. Oh, yeah, wow. It doesn't maintain 30 FPS. It sits at 24.
Yikes!
Which is like 24 is fine for movies, but it's not good for video games at all.
Oh,
and
yikes!
On levels with like lots of environmental stuff happening, which some of the levels have like crazy background stuff going on, or like when your kitchen catches on fire because you're doing really bad, that frame rate will dip to like 18 or 19, which starts to border on almost unplayable in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Especially for a game that is about doing things as fast as possible. So I would imagine that... I can't remember the developer who did it. I would imagine that they are working on a patch, I hope. Yeah. But that game, I mean, that game shouldn't have shipped in that state. They're obviously aware of it because so many outlets were covering it that it's a really bad port. And I feel like an idiot for spending the money on it already. So I'm just really crossing my fingers that they fix it. Otherwise, I will have definitely felt like I wasted $20 on something that doesn't really work
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, what I have played when it's not, like, absolutely tanking frame rates-wise is very fun. It's a really, really good multiplayer game.
Yeah, like, it's a blast. I was playing it at a party that I went to over at the Crunchyroll offices not too long ago. And it's great. It's really, really fun. And I played like one or two levels of it. And I'm like, this is amazing. I was hooked after that. And we just played it for the majority of the evening. It's wonderful. So definitely download that. It's on basically everything.
Yeah, get it on something that's not... I mean, if you want to get it on Switch because you want it mobile for party gaming, like on the go with friends, get it on Switch. But just know that that game is... It runs like horseshit. It runs really poorly.
I recommend it on Xbox or PS4, probably.
Yes, if you don't mind having it, like buying it twice. If you have a Switch and you want on that, I would say if you want to play it at home, if you have a PS4 or Xbox One, buy it there instead.
Yeah.
And then if you want to drop another $20 on Switch, do that. But it just, yeah, it just runs until they patch it. If they do, it runs really bad.
Yeah.
This is actually sort of a... So this actually works as a weird segue.
Yeah, it does, actually.
And I want to preface, I guess, this conversation with... because I feel like it's a pretty sensitive conversation, but me and GJ talked about it before the episode started, and we felt like we should talk about it. But just, we wanted to be careful with how we talked about it. And that's, I think it was Friday night?
Yeah.
Friday night, some stuff went down online involving Nick Robinson of Polygon, who is someone whose content, like, I've always enjoyed. He does, you know, Cool Games Inc. and Carboys and Awful Squad on Polygon with Griffin McElroy and a couple others. So we don't want to talk about it at length, and we certainly don't want to speculate, but we do kind of want to talk about what happened and why it's a thing that does happen, and why we're glad we're seeing how it's being handled, and also just like what we can do in the gaming community for it to help it from happening again, to keep it from happening again, right? So Nick was tweeting about Overcooked, actually, about how absolutely shit the Switch port was, and in a, like, not necessarily uncharacteristic for Nick, but certainly in a more mean and assholish manner than usual, someone responded to him, and the response was basically insinuating that he had basically was sort of digging at him for being, for leaving, for sexually harassing developers, female developers, and female people in the games industry, through their DMs on Twitter. Now, normally, if someone popped into someone's timeline and like threw that in there, it would just seem like sort of weird, and like a thing out of nowhere. And this did initially until a lot of Twitter, a lot of games industry Twitter, sort of vague tweeted things that seemed to be supporting that or in confirmation of it. No one posted receipts, which I think is the right thing to do, as far as it's not your place to out another victim's trauma. You know, if you are a victim and you want to, that's fine. But it was enough that there was enough people kind of confirming vaguely that it obviously had some traction to it. So the good thing is that I believe is one of the I think the editor-in-chief over at Polygon, I think it was him, but basically he tweeted that Nick's been suspended, and they're going to be doing a full investigation, an investigation at Vox Media to figure out what's going on. Which I think is the right way to do it. Like, there was, they didn't take time to deliberate on it. It was an immediate, the allegations were brought forth, they're taking them into consideration, and they are investigating it fully before they make any sort of decisions about it. And in the meantime, you know, he's been suspended as an employee there. So yeah, and what I mean, DJ again talked about us. I don't want to get into speculation about whether or not he did. I think the amount of tweets that came out of a lot of people, and especially because it was in response to something that was sort of out of nowhere, probably lends to some credence that it's probably true.
And I just checked the NeoGAF post where all of this is coming out, and it's been constantly updating with more information. So
yeah,
yeah, but We're not gonna.
If you want to read about it and you want to see all those tweets, and it's coming from other people that in general I've trusted in the game industry, like Gita Jackson, who's usually on point. Mm-hmm. The NeoGAF thread is probably the best place to go catch up on it. What we did want to talk about, though, is I think like power dynamics in the industry and how that leads to this sort of shit happening. I think there's a good discussion to be had here about the sort of soft boy culture. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, Austin Walker had a really good series of tweets about the whole soft boy thing in general, where it's like you have these guys that are very performative about their allyship, mm-hmm. and then still do this shit.
Yep.
And very supportive and vocal about feminism and still do this shit.
Yep.
And I get that because I was a misogynistic asshole like as recently as 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And did dumb shit. So I understand to a degree. That, you know, anyone can be prone to this. Mm-hmm. But basically, how, like, Austin Walker brought up an interesting point about, you know, it's very suspect when a group is like, oh, we're not those type of guys, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, so, you know, we're not these misogynists or these type of guys or, like, the quote-unquote nice guys. Like, that was really the first one I can think of.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I'm not, like, one of those, like, nice guy guys that are this. And then it became, now it's, you know, soft boy. Like, soft boy is now ruined because it's become the new nice guy in a way. I don't know. I'm rambling a little bit here, but I don't know, DJ, if you have anything to sort of say here.
No, I don't think, I mean, I think that what you were saying is very accurate, and it's very, yeah, it's very accurate. What's unfortunate about this is that it's very frustrating because masculinity in and of itself is pretty toxic as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a man, that's not what these strict confines of what it means to be male or you identify as a male means, you're immediately like, oh, you're soft, or you're like a little punk, or you're a wimp, or whatever. But it has adverse effects on the identities of like queer men and
mm-hmm.
and people that are men that are more femme or trans men or any of that. Like it, like there's already such rigid confines to what being a quote-unquote man is supposed to be, that when people who are actually genuinely, that's just who they are at their core, they're real, honest, earnest, nice, you know, open people, soft and kind-hearted people, like, where does that leave them? Where does that leave actual genuine people who are, you know, just genuinely good people? Like, it,
yeah.
And it kind of just like there's already so little for what men can have.
Mm-hmm.
and for good reason. And I mean, and this comes from, it's I'm trying to figure out how to say it. I'm like stumbling over my words, but yeah, it's just, it's like, you're not doing us any favors by being like this. Like, you're not, like, you're causing way more problems. And, you know, like, men are trash, like, for the most part. And it's like, you're not helping your case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by putting on a front like you're a nice person and then still continuing to be trash. Like, I think I said it a little bit better on Twitter this morning. I was like straight men trying to bait and switch women under the guise of being nice or soft is fucked up. Like, why are you like this?
Yes, absolutely. Like, and it's like, I think guys don't sometimes even, I feel like guys don't even realize sometimes that they are being those guys.
Yeah.
And that's not justification of it. Mm-hmm. It's just them not being, self-critical and keep themselves in check. And I think when you, here it is, the danger of the sort of, like, well, those sort of guys or jocks or bros versus nerds, mm-hmm. Or like nice guys. I'm not one of those nice guys. Or now it'll be like, I'm not a soft boy. Right. It's this weird tribalism. It's mm-hmm. this weird thing where you say like teams.
Yeah.
And that's not a thing that does anyone any good. Right.
Right.
I understand the want to self-identify away or the want to distance yourself. But I think if you so vehemently say, I am not that. I am not them. Mm-hmm. I am not that team. I am this team that's a good team.
Mm-hmm.
What you are doing is it's almost like you're almost tricking yourself into not having to scrutinize yourself. And if you don't scrutinize yourself, I think you can easily fall into doing dumb shit like this.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? I think what it does is it keeps you from that scrutiny. So, I mean, if you want to identify, like, personally, the term soft boy, I think is cute.
Yeah.
And I have no problem being like, I am a soft boy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's now going to have, and I think it was already sort of starting to get there, but it's now going to have more of that sort of disingenuous performative mm-hmm. connotation. Mm-hmm. That's negative. That's why when you said sort of that soft boy is like dead now, it's mm-hmm. been ruined. I was like, what about fluff boy? Can we just replace it with something else that's like also cute?
Yeah.
I think to so legitimately say, like, I am this thing and not this thing is a very it's a very dangerous way to ignore the possibility that you could be that way or you have things that lean that way
mm-hmm.
and you have to keep your shit in check.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That is and I just want to clarify something real quick, too, because we said it. I think we probably say men are trash, like, frequently on this podcast.
Yeah.
And part of that is because we keep getting examples to talk about. So if you guys would fucking quit it, we wouldn't do it as much.
Right.
But I don't think we have to necessarily make it clear to our listeners, but any new listeners. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the sentiment, men are trash, it doesn't mean that we hate men. We are both obviously men.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so many amazing, loving males in my life.
Yep.
Even straight white guys yeah. in my life
yeah.
who are like my brothers are the best.
Mm-hmm.
That phrase is not literal. It is a indicator of exhaustion.
Yes.
Like it is when you say, you know, if you're sick of, every DC movie besides Wonder Woman being, you know, before Wonder Woman, like being bad. And you're just like, DC is trash. Like, because you're exhausted over one bad thing after another.
Mm-hmm.
Or anything. It's just, you are voicing exhaustion, not an actual legitimate hate against a type of people.
Right. Because
that is actual bigotry.
Yeah. yeah. And
that is a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's lost. That's, especially in the age of Twitter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was talking about this with my boyfriend, which is part of the reason why he doesn't really engage in Twitter at all.
It's probably smart.
Which is smart. And I wish I had the foresight to have not done this. However, I think...
I want to get nasty, though, so Twitter's a good place to get nasty.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. When you want to be Garbo, it's the perfect platform to do it.
It's perfect.
But nuance is often lost in the age of social media mm-hmm. because when you have a character limit, you can't really get nuance in that. And especially with the way that Twitter handles threads mm-hmm. now... it's even worse to have a continuous stream of thought in a series of tweets that are connected because they keep fucking shit up with Twitter and I don't know, it's stupid, but whatever. It's just hard to have nuanced conversations on things that are more open and long form, like even though this is also trash, Facebook. You have more than 140 characters to like talk about things at
and I don't think people want nuance.
Yeah,
like
they don't.
I mean, I think some people do, but I think unfortunately for like a very large amount of people, they don't want nuance. They want their thoughts or their feelings to be reinforced
mm-hmm.
or they want it in a really like easy to repeat or remember soundbite, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. It's like really hard, but I think that's why it's so important for all of us to constantly like do little gut checks. I think there's this thing where like people are like, oh well, you know, if you're open-minded or you're liberal or whatever, you're never satisfied. And it's like, well, yeah, I think never being satisfied doesn't mean you're miserable.
Right.
Never being satisfied means you always want to be better.
Yeah.
And you always want everything else to be better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I often think that if you're not constantly questioning things and constantly like asking yourself difficult questions, self-reflection and like introspection seems to be a dying art with a lot of people. And again, I'm speaking in generalizing terms, so I'm like, of course, there's nuance to even that statement in and of itself. But
yes.
I feel like a lot of people don't spend the time to look within themselves to ask themselves difficult questions and to kind of look to see maybe if other people are saying X, Y, and Z, that I should kind of take a look inward to see why I don't feel this way or whatever that looks like. And I think of where people spend a little bit more time like saying like, oh, well, somebody is saying this. Mm-hmm. Multiple people, a lot of people are saying X. Maybe if I don't agree with X, there has to be something within what they're saying. There has to be some sort of truth as to what these people are saying. Some sort of truth to it. And sometimes there might not be. But I think mm-hmm. it's worth questioning those things that you're saying.
And like, it's hard. Like, being introspective and like looking at the shit that you have wrong with yourself is hard because it can be depressing, right?
Yeah.
It can be difficult. It's hard to even, I think, balance doing it in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. But I do think to like be better humans, to constantly evolve, to do all that stuff, you have to do it. And if you don't do it, I think you absolutely run the risk of falling into becoming the thing that you don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Because you haven't been paying attention to yourself and your own actions. Mm-hmm. And you're still going to fuck up, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But like, if you do, right the ship. Like, if you're fucking up and you don't take that time to be introspective, mm-hmm. you're not going to fix it for like a long time. And then how much more damage are you going to do to yourself, other people, your brand, mm-hmm. like everything?
Yeah, like people don't want to take ownership of their own stuff.
For sure.
People would it's much easier to blame somebody else for things that you do, to frame it as a reaction to something that someone else has done, rather than being honest and being like, I need to own the things that I have done, and mm-hmm. And if I've done something wrong, I need to claim that, and I need to own that, and I need to be better so that I don't do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, to me, I think that's a very simple concept, but to others, it really isn't.
I think it's literally just part of being an adult.
Yeah.
And not a child, because children are terrible little monsters, and they don't self-introspect. They don't think about how their actions affect the world around them. Mm-hmm. And I think part of a defining thing about being an adult is that you do that.
Yeah.
You think about consequences, and you think mm-hmm. about how you affect things around you.
Yeah.
So that's going on. I'm hoping that things continue. They seem to be like they're being handled in the best way possible.
Yeah.
And I hope that they continue to be done that way. I hope that something potentially good comes out of all mm-hmm. of this. And that people that were negatively affected by mm-hmm. it, like, come out of this in a better place than they were before all of it.
Yeah. Because
this process is hard.
Yeah, and again, like, really, this really quick, like, props to Polygon for handling this the way that it needs to be handled. Not saying that, oh, so handling it means, like, it's never going to happen again or whatever, but, like, I think it's important to acknowledge that, especially within the gaming space, that
yes.
when we've had other instances of harassment being in the Twitter sphere and just in the industry, it hasn't been handled as elegantly as this, and it hasn't been, and not to say that it's perfect, but like, it just hasn't been handled with the amount of being handled with such a sense of urgency. Because we've seen other places kind of like dance around it and not really acknowledge what's happening is actually happening when it's clearly happening. So yeah, this is good on them for doing that. I hope that something good comes from this, and I hope some actual actions are being taken against what's going on. But
yeah, it's really I think a lot of people really had a lot of trust in Nick as far as like being a good ally and all that, and so I think a lot of people feel sort of betrayed in a way,
and that's completely valid too. Like, it's
for sure, like, absolutely,
you can be, you know, a supporter of someone that you thought was cool, and then to be like shocked and upset that that person turns out to be something that they're not is unfortunate, and it's sad, and those feelings of that, of someone that, you know, you once supported have now changed dramatically, is valid. Mm-hmm. So,
and it's not your fault
and it's not your fault
not noticing or not whatever, you know. I think what's good is that to me at least, I think as out of all the video game journalism outlets there are, Polygon to me has been pretty much the most progressive consistently. You know, they have their Polygon Show podcast is for women. You know, they consistently are really good about talking about LGBT rights and how they cross, like how they are cross-sectioned with video games. All of their video content, like almost none of it is I would say cringy towards towards women, towards the queer community, any of it. So I think to me it's really great and really good to see that that wasn't just lip service, that they seem to be legitimate with the actions that they're taking right now. So that's that at the very least is, I think, made me feel better about like consistently always supporting that as a place and respecting it as a place for game journalism. But yeah. So that sucks.
So yeah, so that sucks. Let's take a quick break and then we're going to move on to much happier topics.
For sure.
And we're back to talk about happy things, cool things, and actually more Persona things.
Which you would think, I just got done with so much Persona, and now they're trying to put, like, give more to me.
Sign me up. Sign me up.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm totally fine.
My favorite part of this, and so you guys know what we're talking about, Atlus revealed Persona 3 Dancing Moon Knight, which is just like Persona 4 Dancing All Night, right? And Persona 5 Dancing Star Night. So I thought it was interesting. I expected Persona 5 Dancing game to come out. I did not expect them to go back and do Persona a Persona 3. 3 game.
Yeah.
What this also means is now we have 3D models on a PS4 for Persona 3 characters and some of the 3D environments for the game too. And I'm just like, not saying that they would make it, but they've done some of the work to remake Persona 3 if they wanted to, which would be cool.
Yeah.
How do you your face looks like you like...
No, absolutely. No, it's... I'm so excited. And if they do remake a Persona 3, that would be so dope. I would be so down to play that again. The only thing that I wish they would change is that you can have direct control of your party members. That's like the only thing that I wish they would change if they did a Persona 3 reboot. But
I would assume if they rebooted 3 that we would get some of the combat changes that are in Persona 5. Because those are the most... If there is anything that would potentially put Persona 5 above 3 and 4, it would be the combat stuff. And like how and like the quality of life choices they made. That said, I haven't played 3, and I've heard from so many friends how good it is.
It's very good.
And like, especially story-wise. So I'm like pretty... I would be really interested in that.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, Persona Q2, which looks like it's going to be a Persona 5-ish themed version of Persona Q.
Yeah.
Which wasn't that like very like dungeon crawly first person attack.
Have you played any of the Etrian Odyssey games on the 3DS?
Yes, it's just that. Like that. Okay,
it's that with Persona.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like how some of the Shin Megami games are, pretty much, right?
For the most part,
on 3DS.
For the most part, yeah. So it felt right at home with that style of gameplay, but it was very mm-hmm. much Persona, but with the Etrian Odyssey kind of gameplay mechanics. In terms of navigating the spaces and all that stuff and drawing the maps out and everything. So it was very much an awesome marriage of the two things. It's very good. Persona Q is a very, very good game. So I'm happy to see another one coming. And the one of the things that I want to mention about Persona 3 and Persona 5, Dancing Moonlight and Starlight, is that I hope that we get a PS4 port of Persona 4 Dancing All Night. Because that was the only thing that I wished was the case, was that, because I guess it made sense for at the time, because they didn't know how well that game was going to sell, to only put it on the Vita. So yes. I get it, and it makes sense. But that game did very well, both in Japan and in the US. So I hope that we got a port of that, and that would be amazing if we got a Persona Dancing box or something. Yeah. I don't know, that had Persona 3, 4, and 5 dancing games all in one collection. I would lose my mind and I would pay any amount of money for that. It probably won't happen, but Persona 3 and 5 dancing games, I'm here for it. I love those games.
Persona 4 Dancing All Night had like an actual like storyline and plot, right?
Oh yeah, so it's canon.
Oh my god! Okay, that's what I'm curious about.
Yeah,
because I would have thought that they would maybe make a Persona like dancing game in general if they're going to start doing all of them like this,
yeah.
And then it just. But if they're going to be canonical to the games that they're set in, I understand why there's a Persona 3 dancing game and a Persona 5 separate. Mm-hmm. What it does make me want though is instead of a Persona 5. Ultimax.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to see a Persona Ultimax, and just get 3, 4, 5 characters like all in that mix.
Yeah. So, and that's what I thought you were going when you were talking about the 3D models and stuff. I thought that's where you were going, and not a remake of 3. But I also want a remake of 3 now. I would really love to see, now that Arc Systems has done Guilty Gear and are doing this Dragon Ball Z fighting game.
It looks amazing. Which
both games are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see them do just a Persona Arena. That's all the Persona games. They have all these 3D models now. And then just make a fighting game with all of them in it. So I want my Smash Brothers of Persona, but like a 2D fighting game, like that, like a 2.5D fighting game. Like it, yeah, I'm so excited. I hope that they do it, because that will be an incredibly beautiful and stylish game. And I just, because Persona 4 Arena is amazing, and it's
also a good fighting game.
It's a really good fighting game. Good. So I'm excited to see what comes of that in the future. So. Yeah, just when I thought I didn't get enough Persona, I'm about to get a lot more. And
I want to play other games, though.
I know, so do I.
I want to play other products.
Yeah, and what's good to know is that the localization for Persona 4 Dancing All Night didn't take very long. So it came out in the U.S. 2 months after it dropped in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that were the same case with these dancing titles as well. I hope they do that versus what they did with localizing Persona 5 itself, was they waited until after the game shipped in Japan to start localizing it for the US. And
took forever.
Yeah, so like it came out in September of last year in Japan, and then it dropped in April. So that's September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. 8 months.
And not a fantastic localization.
Oh yeah. So like 8 months is not enough time.
Not enough time.
To localize
time.
a game that is so text heavy.
Yes.
That is so dialogue heavy. That's not nearly enough time. And also what I heard too through the grapevines is that the localization was done by native Japanese speakers who spoke English and not native English speakers that spoke Japanese.
Yeah,
so exactly. That's where a lot of the problems in terms of like sentence structure and all that stuff came about. So because the localization for 4 was decent. So I wish they would have spent more time, but you know, again, amidst all those issues, it's still one of my favorite games of 2017, but
oh, it's still very good.
So yeah, there's a lot more Persona shit coming, and RIP other games.
Speaking of other games, DJ, are you playing? How much Splatoon 2 are you playing? Are you enjoying it the same as the first? Is it?
Yeah, I really like it. I haven't played too much of it, and the reason why I haven't played much of it is because I keep getting disconnected. So it's more.
Are you playing on Wi-Fi or?
Yeah, I've been playing it on Wi-Fi, and
yeah,
and it's just been having connectivity issues. Just. It's a server thing from them because my internet is very good. So
I've heard that from many people, and I've heard somebody went out. There is someone wrote an article about how they went out and they bought the Wii Ethernet adapter, and they stopped having those issues.
Yeah.
But that's weird because it's not like if you have a really good internet connection, that shouldn't be an issue over Wi-Fi.
Right.
Like,
right.
Changing from those two, it seems like a server issue on Nintendo's side. So I'm not sure what's going on, but I've heard that from many friends.
Yeah, so I haven't played as much of it as I would like just because of the connectivity issues. Mm-hmm. But I will say that the choice is clear from the Splatfest.
Uh-huh.
That Ketchup is gonna win.
I mean, I feel like they really fucked Pearl. Like, they're like, you know, everyone loves Marina, so they're gonna like side towards Marina anyway. But then you do Mayo versus Ketchup, like, which, to be fair, one of the widest things about me is I actually like mayo. like the little part of me that's not Latino is like mayonnaise, yes. it's just like a weird, I don't know, it's a weird choice. If it was Kewpie, I'd be like, oh yeah, Kewpie, for sure. But just normal mayo, not my fave. The other thing is, so for the Splatfest, they have changed the color of the ink to mayo and ketchup, which like just doesn't look so good.
Yeah.
Not so great.
No.
at the risk of getting real narsty on this podcast, just looks like every fight's just like cum and blood.
Yeah,
it just looks real bad.
Man. Yeah,
not the best choice.
Yeah. That's.
Just not the best idea.
No. But beyond that, Splatoon 2 is a very good game. It's visually, you have to see it in person.
Yes.
That it looks much better than the first game.
My roommate has it and she's straight addicted. Like she plays it constantly.
Yeah.
Every week, I'm, like, so tempted. I get, like, within, like, moments of buying it because I want to play it with people and I want to play it. And I just, I feel like it'll be a waste of my money because I just don't think it's a game that, I love everything about it except for the actual gameplay. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think it'll take this time. The only thing I want to try, and maybe I'll ask my roommate if I can try it and see if it's, like, enough to make me buy it, is Salmon Run sounds really fun.
Yeah, so I hear that the PvE is really the PvE is really good, but it's Nintendo doing Nintendo things to where you can't just like boot up Splatoon 2 and play Salmon Run whenever you want.
Yeah, it's limited times. I've heard it's the limited times are pretty frequent, is what I've heard.
They're okay from what I've heard. I think they might be. I think they've just recently changed them to be a little bit more frequent. Because it's like one is super late at night and one's like in the morning, but people have jobs.
Yes.
So
some adults play this game.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like it's not great. It's like, there already aren't a whole lot of gameplay modes in Splatoon, period. Mm-hmm. So to lock one out to an arbitrary time thing seems a little ridiculous to me.
Yeah, and I don't really see what the advantage of that is, unless it's for server reasons on their end. Mm-hmm. I don't see the benefit of it for them. I've seen some people talk about how they like it because it makes it feel like it's special, and because you get really good loot drops from it. Mm-hmm. But then I don't know, like. So, okay, this is how they handle it in Destiny, right? The Crucible, which is PvP in Destiny, mm-hmm. is always available at all times. Mm-hmm. Once a month or every couple months, mm-hmm. they do Iron Banner. Iron Banner is PvP, but it has specific, like, quests, like, specific bounties, like, things that you want to do during PvP matches. It has a specific, reputation level, like the more of them you play, you can get to such a certain level, mm-hmm. and the higher your level is, it unlocks specific Iron Banner themed equipment that you can buy. Yeah. And so it makes it special, but nothing about Iron Banner gameplay is any different. It's the same. What they'll do is that Iron Banner, whenever it comes, they'll choose one PvP mode, and that's what Iron Banner is for that week mm-hmm. that it's available. So if they wanted to do this with Salmon Run, I feel like Salmon Run should be available at all times, but you only make certain loot drops available at certain times, or certain equipment, or just certain things. Mm-hmm. I think that would still give it the like special feeling, but you could also just do it at any time and have fun with your friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it just, I love Nintendo, but they just do really dumb shit.
Like a very backwards company in a lot of ways.
Yeah, frequently. Yeah. Like they do a lot of really dumb things, and I'm like, guys, stop! You're so close to being like, we can completely compete with PlayStation Network and Xbox Live. We are right there. But you have to, like, the stupid app for the, I'm not going to get into it.
That was honestly a big reason why.
It's so dumb. Like, I don't mind companion apps. Like, the PlayStation Network app, yes. while it's slow, yes. is still, you can, like, buy games through the app, and then it goes to your PlayStation.
It's useful.
Come on.
It is one of the reasons why I didn't buy, why I'm less likely to buy it, because I really only want to play that game if I'm playing it with friends. Mm-hmm. And the idea that to get voice chat going through the game is so ridiculously hard.
Mm-hmm.
I know I could use Discord or something else, but the fact that there's a whole app that is weird, 100% a reason why I've been hesitant to buy it.
It's dumb. It's really, really dumb. But yeah, so Nintendo doing Nintendo things, as usual. Love them, but Jesus Christ, guys, come on. Oh, man. So I just found this right before we started recording.
You have, like, you guys can't see DJ, but he's smiling so big. He has such a big, stupid smile on his face. DJ, tell the people why you're so happy.
I'm so excited because, so there's a Bandai Namco Games announced a couple months ago that they're making a new Naruto fighting game. Called Naruto to Boruto Shinobi Strikers, and it's Nart to Bart. So it's a squad based fighting game, which is cool because in Naruto, you know, the whole thing is that they're in three man cells and they, you know, they fight each other as a group, as a team. And we've never really had a Naruto game that really made that the primary thing. We've always had, like, head-to-head Naruto fighting games, and even in the Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm games, where you have three characters on your team, you still only fought with them one at a time. So
I like the idea of this a lot. I have no idea if it's going to be good, but the idea of like, I'm like, me and my buddies gonna be like, yo, we roll as team seven, you know, is cool. Yeah. But it really depends on how good the game is. But the best part is, though,
the best part is that you get to make your own fucking ninjas, so your Naruto OCs can finally come to life.
I can finally make Nart for real. Yeah. My own Nart. Yes. He's going to be the Naruto, but he's just going to look slightly derpy. He's going to be just... Everything's going to be slightly off-brand. Off. like his Dollar Tree Naruto.
And so the reason why I am really hopeful about this game is because of Dragon Ball Xenoverse. And Dragon Ball Xenoverse is very good. And it's like a multiplayer team-based MMO type of situation. And it's really good. Like, Dragon Ball Xenoverse is a ton of fun. I played the first one religiously for a while, and it was great. And then I have the second one, but I really haven't dug too much into it. But it's really good. So I'm thinking if it's the same team involved with making it, then the Naruto version of that should be pretty good. So I watched a Japanese gameplay stream of it, and it looks legit. So I'm hoping that it's good. I hope that the character creation options are good. I hope that I can at least make a brown ninja, because there are actually black characters in Naruto.
Yes, Killer B and like his entire squad.
The whole Cloud Village is like the black ninja village. So
yeah, it's the hip hop village.
Yeah, like hip-hop ninja village.
We're killer.
So
not stereotypical at all.
Yeah, not problematic in and of itself, but you know, I'm glad that black folks exist in Naruto land. So
and was a big part of the story. He was an important character.
Yes, very important characters, and the Raikage is like, actually
super important.
Yeah, the Raikage is actually a beast. So it's cool. So I'm hoping those options exist in Naruto, to Boruto, Shinobi Strikers.
I feel like 2017 is the year, like, somehow, and I've said this before, but this, like, expands on it, that, like, game developers knew that it was going to be a shit show and we would need some good escapism. Mm-hmm. So not only did they release all these really amazing, fantastic games right when the year started, but they're also releasing, they're like, you know what, maybe we don't get it, but we know you're all trash. So here's a Naruto game where you can make your own Naruto OC. Here's a Sonic game where you can be your own Sonic OC. They're just like, you know what? The whole world's going to shit anyway. Enjoy being a trash pile.
Yeah.
We'll give you the tools to be as trashy as you can be.
Yeah.
I'm very appreciative.
I approve of this. This works for me. This definitely works.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. To be good, hopefully.
I hope that, and I really
be
hope
upset
that it's good.
Otherwise.
I really hope that it's good.
I am glad that it's at least a change in formula from the fighting games. Like, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I honestly would love to see like a good like Naruto action RPG game. That's what I really want. Yeah. Like, give me a Bayonetta, Nier Automata style Nart game. Let Platinum do that business and make it real good.
That would be nice. That would be really, really nice. Oh man! But you've got something that you're really excited about.
Oh well, I was really excited about this just because I like Deadpool a lot, and I thought the first movie was very good, and the second one is being made, and they announced that Zazie Beetz, who is in Atlanta, the Donald Glover TV show, was going to be Domino, which is dope because I don't think Domino's ever been black in the comics. Mm-hmm. Domino's appearance has actually always been like hyper, like super pale white with a big black spot around one of her eyes. So they finally released a picture of Zazie as Domino, and it's great because she's just like just beautiful, amazing black woman, and she has huge hair. Like, they didn't try to like tone it down. Mm-hmm. Like, it is proper. Like, it is. There's always this like discussion and like hand-wringing about black hair because for some reason I don't understand why it's an issue for people like outside of the black community. Why people are just like, this hair is too much, or this. I'm like, no, it's just hair.
Yeah.
Like, why would you? No, it's fine. It's just some people have hair that grows up and out and it's an afro. What's your fucking deal?
Yeah.
She has like huge, amazing hair, And what I loved is that because she's dark-skinned, instead of having a black circle around one of her eyes, she has sort of a white spot around one of her eyes. And it's vitiligo mm-hmm. in the movie. So not only is it like this dope character that is now this black character, which is a really cool and interesting change that doesn't like change the character at all. It's still very true to, I think, like what the character can be. Mm-hmm. But also a character that has an autoimmune deficiency, mm-hmm. Which you never see, especially in like a superhero film. Yeah. And it's just like really cool. I'm just very excited for those choices they made because they're very like, very cool choices in an industry that usually makes very stupid choices.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's really awesome, too, because it's also just bringing attention to, like black women being able to see themselves in roles that typically have been only reserved for white women. Like, they yes. get to be the empowered, like, character in a superhero movie. I can't wait for Black Panther. And then, and even in the new Thor movie coming out, like there's all these awesome black women that aren't just like, girl and all this other stuff. So like, they're actually awesome fucking heroes.
Yeah. What's her name from Westworld is in mm-hmm. it as a major role. Yeah. And she's awesome. In Thor. It's also just cool. I think specifically the vitiligo thing is cool because I've had quite a few friends actually that have vitiligo. And it's such a very visible thing. Like it's a thing that a lot of my friends who had it were always so self-conscious about and felt very like, it made them very self-conscious because it's such a visible thing. It affects how you look, you know, it's your skin. Mm-hmm. And we've had some like really positive things for people who have it, like Winnie Harlow, who is in America's Next Top Model, who's gorgeous and has like really, really prominent vitiligo. And just so that just showing that like people that have autoimmune disorders or things that change their physical appearance can still be just as beautiful and just as rad. And the fact that they gave it to Domino and Zazie Beetz, who's just this beautiful, beautiful person. Mm-hmm. It's just really cool. I'm just very excited about that whole. All of these decisions are just really cool decisions.
Yeah,
to me.
Me too. I really like that a lot. And it's been really exciting for me as like a black man to see black men and women being featured, being center stage in sci-fi, in romance, and in romantic comedies, and like in action films, and all that stuff. Like even though I hear that Dark Tower is really bad, but like seeing Idris Elba in a leading action role was really cool. Like just from the representation standpoint. And if you guys haven't seen Girls Trip yet, you need to go see it because it is the funniest fucking movie I've seen in a really long time. It's really good. It stars Jada Pinkett Smith. It stars, I believe, it's Nia Long, Queen Latifah, and why do I always forget her name? Because she basically carries the movie. She's so good. Let's see. Let me go to the cast. I can't believe that I'm blinking on this right now. Oh, that's frustrating. Yeah, it has an 87 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's Regina. Yeah, it's not Nia Long, it's Regina Hall. Yeah, it's Regina Hall, Tiffany Haddish, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Queen Latifah. And there are like four girlfriends that haven't seen each other since college, and they go to New Orleans for Essence Festival, and it's this great romantic comedy about four black women, and we haven't had seen a comedy film that has four leading black women in it, like ever. So mm-hmm. it's really, really awesome. It's super funny, and it's great because, like, again, you don't often see black women as the love interest, as a desirable woman that deserves love and can be romanced and all that stuff. Like, you don't get to see those things, and that movie delivers on all of that, and it's fucking hilarious. Like,
I need to see it, because I have not seen it.
It's so good. I want to see it again. It's so good. me and my boyfriend just quote the movie on a regular basis now. It's really good. It's really, really good. And if you don't know Tiffany Haddish, she is hilarious. She was just on Jimmy Kimmel, and mm-hmm. she was talking about a story while they were filming the movie with Jada, and Will Smith was there, and they were in New Orleans. And the story is hilarious. She's so funny. But yeah, go see that movie. It's great. And there's all of this like black excellence that's happening in film and television right now, and in comics as well, and in animation, which is really cool. So I'll actually segue into talking about some anime, because that kind of I wanted to bring up something else too about what's coming up in the anime land.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, for sure. I think the two things I just want to talk about real quick is Sony just bought Funimation, which,
What do you think that means?
Well, so Funimation and Crunchy had an agreement for a bit, so I would imagine that agreement will either stay through negotiation, or that means that Crunchy will probably lose their access to the Funimation catalog stuff they did have access to through that deal, which sucks. The other thing is, I'm curious what that does. So, Crunch, like Daisuke, is shutting down.
Really?
They never really caught on, even though they had some exclusives. They had, I think, One Punch Man was exclusive to Daisuke for a minute when it was in simulcast before I think Netflix got it. Daisuke shutting down. I don't know what the future looks like for Crunchyroll, because everyone else who's entering the game is a big player. Mm-hmm. Sony has deep pockets. Netflix has deep pockets. Amazon has very deep pockets. I don't know how you compete bidding on licenses without that sort of capital behind you. So I am really curious what's going to happen to Crunchy at this point. Because they do a very good job. Like, I think that they've had, in my experience, they've had some issues with, like, sometimes server problems. Yeah. But as far as simulcasting, as far as how much they are obviously fans of anime, and the content they produce on top of the anime that they have for everyone, is just, it feels like a company that actually gives a fuck about anime, which is really important. But it just, I'm really curious what's going to happen, because Amazon Strike is still not the best streaming service. Yeah. Netflix won't simulcast, which is the stupidest fucking thing. And frankly, all of those changes being made, it's only going to drive people back into downloading fan subs again. Like, that's all it's going to do. It's going to, like, we have had such a good run of being able to legally acquire anime over the past couple of years. And I think because these companies are really doing a shitty job of offering it properly, it's going to drive people to not want to spend money on it. 100%.
Yep.
So there's that. And then just because I've been watching stuff from the season still, one of the things that stood out to me as I've been watching is there is a series called Sure Sure Children, which is like 12-minute episodes. Mm-hmm. It's sort of four coma style, and it's just a bunch of romantic comedy stuff. It just follows a bunch of couples, and it's incredibly cute and really funny and just super well done. And that's on Crunchy, so you can watch it there. But that was the only anime news I had.
What I wanted to talk about really quickly, just because it kind of links back to what I was talking about with all the stuff happening to the representation of African-American people and black people in media all across the board, is that LaShawn Thomas, who, if you don't know who LaShawn Thomas is at this point, you probably have been living under a rock. But LaShawn Thomas, he's an animation producer, director, animator, comic book artist, writer, character designer, storyboard artist, you name it. Like, he does it all. He's fucking incredible. And he has been in the game for such a long time. He was known for doing a lot of work on Boondocks. So if you watched Boondocks, LaShawn Thomas had his hand in that super deep, which is really cool, because that show was phenomenal. He has two he has a movie and a series coming out. So Children of Ether is a movie that's a Crunchyroll exclusive that's coming out. I believe that came out either this week or it's coming out this week or it came out last week.
I'm very excited for that because it has the character designer from Michiko Tahachin. Yep. So everyone looks really good.
Yeah. And like Sean did the initial designs for them, and then the character designer from Michiko Tahachin, you know, brought them to life, and it's so dope. And then he was originally pitching it as a comic book, but now it's going to animation. Cannon Busters just got picked up by Netflix. So he's making huge waves, and it's long overdue for him. He's been in the game for such a long time and has been working so hard. He's been working in Japan and in the U.S. and just, yeah, he's just been in the game doing the damn thing for such a long time. So to see him really, like, lead his own projects and them coming out and they all look fantastic is truly awesome and really amazing. So I aspire to be a fraction of as successful and as popular as LaShawn Thomas is within my own career. Like, he is definitely someone that I've looked up to, and I think it's super important for people of color, and especially like black kids, to see people that look like them that are interested in these things that more often than not aren't really thought of as cool by other black people. And being kind of like labeled as like a weirdo or like a nerd and all this other shit just because you like anime and comic books and stuff. It's really cool to see someone that looks like us be at the helm of these projects and do really well. So it's,
I mean, to me it only makes sense because I feel like the black community is really underrepresented in anime in general, and so many black people I know and black friends that I have love anime.
Black people love anime.
You show me a black dude that was born born between the years of like 1988 and like, I don't know, like 2000. Show me a black dude that doesn't love Dragon Ball Z from like that time range.
Like you're not, like, no one's gonna sit on here listening to this podcast and tell me they did not see that one black friend that had those cheap polyester t-shirts that were all over prints of Dragon Ball Z characters all over him. You know, you either had one or you had a cousin or a friend, a neighbor, a classmate.
That Trigun button up.
Or that Dragon Ball Z button up. Or, like, somebody had it. You know someone that had it. Like, that's a whole demographic of people that love anime and manga and are lit and hyped for Dragon Ball Z, Samurai Champloo, One Punch Man, all that stuff. Like, they out here. They in these streets. Like, you need to go to the anime conventions, they out here. So, like, it doesn't make sense that there isn't more representation of us in this content. And I'm happy to be part of that myself with Black Mage. And it's, you know, it's really cool to see all of this stuff happening. It makes me really excited.
That's a nice little plug. Nice,
yeah,
little
plug. You like how I slipped that in there real quick?
Just slipped it in. DJ, did you have a Dragon Ball Z button?
I didn't have a Dragon Ball Z button up, but I did have several Sailor Moon shirts. So
they're, okay.
And I did have my fair share of Dragon Ball Z shirts and all that stuff because at the time, like, because Hot Topic has been in existence for as long as I've been alive, and like they had like Dragon Ball Z shirts, and now that like anime is like cool and accessible, like being able to walk into Hot Topic and buy like anime shirts that are actually like in my size for shows that I like is super dope. So like I have like my Yuri on Ice shirts. I just bought a fucking like Sailor Moon shirt and a Dragon Ball Z shirt and all that stuff. So being able to get that stuff is so dope. So
waiting right now for like those club shirts to go back in style. Those like terrible, like, because you know Hot Topic will have before.
Oh yeah,
the moment it happens. Yeah,
absolutely. I'm sure it's only a matter of time. To be perfectly honest,
it'll be UFO pants and Dragon Ball Z button ups again.
Oh man, what a time to be alive.
What a time to be in high school. Jeez. Not awkward. I think that wraps it up for us this week. If you had embarrassing Dragon Ball Z button-up shirts and Trigun shirts, get at us on Twitter. You can get DJ at
OheyDJ on Twitter. That's OHHEYDJ. I'm literally on the internet at all times, so hit me up.
And you can get at me at Robots, ROOBOTS, on Twitter.com. I think me and DJ talked about it. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to get the show going back to weekly.
Yes.
So look forward to that. We'll be able to cover more news, more relevant as it mm-hmm. happens. We will be at Crunchyroll Expo in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So DJ has a table there. I ideally will be nearby. Mm-hmm. So come holler at mm-hmm. us for sure. I also just launched a comedy podcast called You're Welcome Hollywood. It's me and two of my straight white comedy friends. So if you want to hear some straight white boys, this is a good opportunity. But what we do is every week we get a either get a suggestion from Twitter, or it just kind of organically comes about from us talking, and we settle on a idea or a theme, and then we improvise an entire movie script on That's the spot. It's super fun and stupid. Our first episode came out Wednesday, and it is it's sort of a it's like a band movie about the rise and fall of a band, but it's set but instead of being modern, it is a like Baroque era composer. And it is fucking, it is stupid. It's very funny but very stupid. So go check that out. You can find it on iTunes, Google Music, Stitcher, anywhere that you find podcasts. You can pick it up and let us know. And if you're listening to us for the first time, or if you haven't, please give us a rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere else, because it's the best way to spread this podcast around and get more people listening to it, and get it more visibility in that iTunes business.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, if you guys want to be on, if you guys, gals, and everything else in between want to ever be on the show, please hit us up, email us. If you go to magicalboyspodcast.com, there is a form that you can fill out. If you want to be on the show, we can definitely fit you in. We'll line up our schedules and get you on the show so you can talk shop with us and, you know, geek out with us. And yeah, we want to hear what your perspective is on things as well. And
send us listener mail.
Yeah.
Like if you have any questions or prompts or anything, we love answering that stuff on the show.
Yeah, please do.
So send us some.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about it.
Yeah,
on here.
We definitely have we have a list of people that want to be on the show, so we got to get that rolling here pretty soon. But we would love to have you guys on the show. Hit us up, and then follow the podcast on Twitter as well at Magical Boys Podcast, or no, at The Magical Boys. I'm sorry, The Magical Boys on Twitter as well. And yeah, hit us up.
And I think that's it for us today. So we'll see you guys again in a week.
Yes, we'll see you guys next week.
And in the meantime, don't be a dickhead. Be cool.
Be magical and be cool, man. That's all that you have to do.
All right. See you next time. We'll see you guys later.
Bye.